You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
Hand across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Chris Paul Bello, author of Alan Henderson, The Rain King. This, my friends, is episode 282. I was born in 1982, so I'm dedicating this episode none other than me. Who put this thing together? Me. That's who. Who do I trust? Me. On today's episode, we're going to talk about Troy Williams fracturing his jaw. His season is over. Boo. But I'm going to give you guys a few silver linings and then give a mini season review of Troy Williams' play. It's largely positive. I'm going to look ahead to our final five games to see what condition the tank is in. Then I'm going to close out the show by sharing some audio of Ian Begley, friend of the Sodes, interviewing Trey Burke. And I'm going to explain how what Trey Burke says in this interview confirms some of the things that we've seen with regards to his fantastic point guarding. All right, let's start the show. Hit it, Marv!
Yes!
Troy Williams will miss the last five games of the season with a fractured jaw. Here's what happened. There were 47 seconds left in the game the other day against the Detroit Pistons. The Knicks were down 113 to 107. Hardaway got a steal. He led the Knicks on a break. He missed the transition layup. Troy Williams shot over for the rebound. He ran over to get it. Ish Smith ran over at the same time. And basically, Troy Williams had better position. So instead of trying to go around him, Ish Smith tried to go through him to get the rebound. And slammed his shoulder into Troy Williams' face, breaking his jaw. I'm not saying he was trying to do it. He probably, you know, didn't mind if he gave Williams a shock. Let's put it that way. He wasn't that concerned with pulling up. But I'm sure he wasn't thinking about breaking his jaw. Come on, he wasn't trying to do that. Anyway, the foul was called on Ish Smith, Clyde's favorite player for some reason. Williams gets up holding his mouth. So, you know he's hurting because he already got the foul call. He's going to the line. There's no need to sell it at this point. So I was a little bit concerned. I was thinking maybe he knocked a tooth out, but I didn't see any blood. So that's when me, medical genius, started to think something was wrong. But to Troy Williams' credit, he got up, he calmly sank two free throws, which is mildly heroic. I mean, have you ever broken your jaw? I haven't, but I'm sure it hurts. It reminded me of one of the great feats that I've witnessed in my life. My good friend Alex got pushed off a deck during a high school party. It wasn't that malicious. Someone was like shoving him, joking around. He fell backwards. He hit this railing, but it was an old wooden deck, and it just went. The railing just fell off. He fell backwards at the deck, which was about, let's say, 5 feet off the ground. He was in a lot of pain. He got up, got back onto the deck, calmly sunk a beer pong shot to win the game before going to the hospital where he was diagnosed with a broken elbow. So, two heroic plays of my lifetime that I've witnessed. Troy Williams getting up to sink free throws with a broken jaw. My friend Alex getting up with a broken elbow to sink two free throws. Both very impressive, and I'm not sure which one was more impressive. But we're not here to try to pit them against each other. Come on, guys. This is a bummer. But there are some silver linings, and before I let you know those silver linings, hold on, let me dig through my crates here, find the right record. Okay, I'm going to put this on to you know, I want the appropriate mood to be set. So let's put on this song.
Yo, G, they can't stop me from rapping, can they? Can they hop?
All right, now that we got the right mood music, silver lining number one, a jaw injury is not going to affect your athletic performance going forward. It could be tough mentally, you know, to stop worrying about getting your face smacked when you get back out there. You're, you know, maybe being very careful with it. You flinch a little bit. And I don't want to undersell that. But, you know, first of all, historically, we've seen a lot of guys play with face masks. And it doesn't seem to be a thing that lingers in terms of, you know, affecting your aggressiveness. So I think he'll be fine mentally, but look, it's not an injury to his knees, to his feet, to his back, to his shoulder, to his elbow, to his wrist. You know, something that's more involved. Basically, every part of your body is involved in playing basketball except your jaw. So it shouldn't affect his performance going forward. And he seems to have played well enough to where the Knicks will keep him on the roster next year. He's got a partially guaranteed contract, which means it doesn't kick in. In his particular instance, it doesn't kick in unless the Knicks keep him around. But I think they will. I think he's shown enough. I think the organization likes him. He's done a good job, and he deserves it, frankly. I don't think there should be any question about whether or not he's done enough to come back next year. The Knicks need wings. They need young players. They need young athletic wings. He checks all those boxes. Let's talk about what Troy Williams has shown us so far this year. I mean, right off the bat, the scouting report is true. It's been verified. Extreme athleticism. He runs well in transition. He comes back. He is aggressive getting put back dunks. He sees the ball. He goes and gets the ball. Off ball movement he's been good at. He makes hard cuts to the basket. He's got good hands catching the pass, laying it in. I think what's a real credit to someone like Troy Williams, who wants to do everything he can to stick in the NBA, is that he knows what he's good at. I want to give you guys a couple of stats to back that up, to bolster my, you know, what I see with mine own two eyes. So, caveat here, only 270 minutes have been played with the Knicks by Troy Williams, but this is what we've seen so far. He's scoring 1.15 points per shot attempt. 1.15 points per shot attempt, which is 78th percentile among wings in the league. So that's a very good number. Part of that, like I said, knows what he's good at. He gets to the rim. 60% of his shots are at the rim. Seems like a lot, right? How much is that? Well, he's 96th percentile for wings. Only 3% of his shots are long mid-range twos. Yeah, get it, Troy! You know, that makes me feel good. Hate those long-range twos. Now, he could work on his finishing, but he's not bad. He's shooting 61% at the rim, which is 55th percentile for wings. It's like thoroughly in the good camp. Not great. But we've seen sometimes he comes in a bit wild, right? If anything, I think he almost gets like quote-unquote punished a bit here by how athletic he is, because he gets to the rim sometimes by virtue of being an absolute just rocket ship. What up, Paul Pierce? And often when that happens, when he just rockets to the rim, Paul Pierce didn't rocket to the rim. I'm making fun of him for not having to do emojis. You guys remember. Anyway, fuck Paul Pierce is what I'm trying to say. But when Troy Williams rockets to the rim, sometimes he's a bit out of control by the time he gets there, and it's a little bit of a wild fling, right? Not necessarily Moutier style out of control, falling all over the place, but a little bit wild. Knows what he's good at. 31% of his shots are from three, which is on the low end for a wing, 21st percentile for wings. But he's only shooting 31% from three, which is 19th percentile for wings. So he's not shooting great from three, but he doesn't take that much from three. But notice, he still knows a three is a lot better than a long two. You know, he comes from the Rockets system, so thank you, Rockets, for helping out there. 31% of his shots are from three. 3% are from long two, so even though he's not shooting the threes that well, he knows that that's a better shot than that long two. He's not killing it from downtown, so it makes sense to take it to the rack. Again, like we said, and he's taking it to the rack. Though, obviously, for next season, you know, that next step he needs to take is to work on making his three-point shot passable. Say, around 35%, right? He's got kind of a funky shot where he splays his legs out, but to me, his release seems quick enough. It seems like straight enough. It seems his release point seems high enough, although I would need to watch some more film on him. I'm just kind of going from memory here. But it remains to be seen what will happen there. Maybe he never improves his three, but I think he can. He's young. He's just starting to get minutes. That's the kind of thing where, you know, based on how athletic he is, how good at driving he is, how good at off-ball cutting he is, how good in transition he is, if he can have that three-point shot, it's going to go a long way to making him a valuable NBA rotation player. He also rebounds very well for a wing. He does a couple of good hustle things. Now, he doesn't get a lot of minutes, right? So rate stats are helpful here for helping us look at like what he's doing. Because he's only getting 3 rebounds per game, but he's only playing 14 and a half minutes per game. So you look at that number and you're like, well, is that even good? But by offensive rebounding rate, he's 99th percentile for wings. He's grabbing offensive rebounds at a 99th percentile rate for all wings. That'll probably go down a little bit as he gets more minutes. But it'll go from the very best in the league to, you know, maybe well above average. Defensive rebounding rate, he's 83rd percentile for a wing. So put those two together. Again, this is all caveated with small sample size, but it he crashes the boards. He gets those putback dunks like we've seen. That goes towards his offensive rebounding rate. He's hustling, though. He's gotten lots of steals to speak to his hustling. He has won a game in very limited time. He gets a steal in 3 out of every 100 possessions, which seems low, but steals aren't that common, and that's 98th percentile for a wing. Defense, it's harder to gauge, right? But from what I've seen, he looks quick and attentive. I talked about the other day how he lost his man. He was trying to see the man on the ball on a blob play, on a baseline out of bounds play. He got a little confused, but when I watched him, he was active. His head was on a swivel. He just kind of lost it. He wasn't like falling asleep. He doesn't give up on plays either, which I like. He chases guys hard when he does get beat off the dribble or around a pick. He goes for blocks from behind, but doesn't seem to foul a lot, so I like that. And he's strong, too. I think he can do a passable job against fours. He plays something like 97% of his minutes at the small guard, at the small forward position, but I think he can do an okay job switched onto fours. The Knicks, as a team, give up 1.6 fewer points per 100 possessions with him on the court than off. That's only good for 115.4 points per 100, which would be at the bottom of the league. But the Knicks, who are a terrible defensive team since Troy Williams has been here, are a little bit better defensively when he's on the court. I think that tracks with the eye test. Overall, if you want to talk about on-off numbers, they're 7.5 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court than off. Which I think makes a lot of sense given what we've just talked about and what we've seen for him this year. So Troy Williams, I think, has really solid glue guy potential, someone who doesn't demand a high usage rate to affect the game, can affect the game in many ways. So Troy, you have a hard road ahead of you recovering from a broken jaw. I'm sure that's not fun. You're going to be drinking through straws for a little bit. You might have it wired shut for a little bit, but I think you're going to come back better than ever. I think you're going to keep improving. I like your demeanor. Your con out there. What a great pickup by Scott Perry. I think it has the potential to really go somewhere. I want to give you guys an update on the tank by looking ahead at the Knicks' next 5 games, their final 5 games of the season. But first, just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network in the entire multiverse! Earth. 5 more games! 5 more games! 5 more games! We're in the home stretch. Usually you say that chant in like a 4 more years kind of way when you want more. I'm saying this celebrating that there's only 5 more. Because, whew! I love watching NBA basketball. I like watching the Knicks even during a tank season, but come on, there's a limit, right? There's a limit to how much of this we can watch. These games are home against the Magic this Tuesday, which is a toss-up. But I would say a likely win with Burke playing well as he's been playing. Maybe Beasley catches fire. Still, it's nothing's guaranteed down the stretch here in the tank world. So they're playing the Magic on Tuesday. Then they're home against Miami. That's a loss. Home against the Bucks, that's a loss. I'm actually going to that one on Saturday because I want to see Giannis live and in person. Should be fun. Home against the Cavs after that, that's a loss. Then they're away at the Cavs, finishing up the season with a home and home. That's a loss too, I think. So at most, the Knicks are 1-4. there's a possibility that all those home games could get them like weirdly confident. So, you know, possibly like 2-3. But I think they're 1-4, maybe even 0-5. Now, Chicago is one game ahead of them for the 8th spot. And Chicago has got the Nets 2 times and the Hornets 1 time. So that's 3 possible wins. Chicago's shutting down everyone for the season. Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine. But the Nets are garbage. The Hornets, the Knicks destroyed by 1,000 points, you know, a couple weeks ago. So it's possible that Chicago could get 3 wins out of this. Then they play the Celtics and the Pistons. Those are likely losses. So basically, all it would take is one Knicks loss and one Chicago win, and the Knicks would be tied with them. So it's very possible that they tie, based on schedule. At which point, we've got a coin flip for 8th. As we saw last year, the Knicks lost that to Minnesota. But they're bound to lose to win this time, right? See, I couldn't even get it out right. I said bound to lose by accident. That's the gambler's fallacy, by the way. What happened in the last statistical outcome has no bearing on what happens now. Every coin flip is a 50% chance. It doesn't matter what happened. You could, in theory, flip 1,000 heads in a row and nothing weird would be happening. That's not exactly right, but you get the picture, okay? And it's also not impossible that the Knicks take the 8 seed outright. So that's something to look forward to. It's interesting. Some intrigue to end the season. I've talked myself into almost wanting the 9th pick in the draft, but shit, you know, I'll take those odds and move up to the 8th because the 8th pick has a 10% shot at a top 3 pick. And the 9th pick has a 6% shot at a top 3 pick. So that's a touch above 50% more odds moving from 9th to 8th. And as we know, a 3 is worth 50% more than a 2. So you know where I stand on this. I want that 8th pick. I basically want to either go 0-5 from now until the end of the season or 5-0. I want nothing in between. Because the Knicks are 6.5 games ahead of the 10th seed, so there's literally no chance of falling back to 10th. And I kind of want to see like Timmy and Burke and shit, Bees and Frank and Jared Jack and Enes Kanter, each of them have 50-point games and run away with this thing. But honestly, I'm good with either outcome at this point. But it could be interesting. I thought for sure the Knicks were in 9th, but now, a game out and with the schedule what it is the last 5 games, it'll, I think, come down to the very end. I want to talk about Trey Burke. I want to talk about some things he said to Ian Begley. I'm going to share an audio clip with you. But first, just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes, rate us 5 stars, leave a sentence or 2 review. I'm curious what your favorite part of it is. If you have some constructive criticism, I'll take that too. Once again, it's Locked On Knicks. The other day I said Trey Burke was point guarding well. With that in mind, I want us to take a listen to a brief, it's like a 1.5-minute interview that he had with Ian Begley, friend of the pod, where some of the things Burke says back up some of my observations. All right, let's hit play on this.
At this point in your career than you did earlier?
Yeah, of course. The game slowed down tremendously for me. Like I said, the biggest thing is not predetermining what I'm going to do coming off the pick and roll, but just letting the play, you know, pretty much forward, you know, allowing the defense to make a mistake. And whatever they take away, you know, I know what my other option is. And I think that's just from years and years of watching film, game experience, you know, all of those things playing. Big factor in that.
Does that have any kind of a different approach to like film study or anything like that, or is that all the same?
Pretty much all the same. Just more consistent with it, you know, trying to, you know, see what each team does. You know, for instance, if we play Milwaukee, I know that's more of a longer team. Knowing that I'm not really be able to get to the rim as much as I might like tomorrow with Orlando. Obviously with Biombo, you know, playing, you know, last game with Detroit, knowing that Drummond, even in Charlotte with Dwight Howard, just knowing personnel and trying to exploit any weaknesses in the defense. Like I said, just not already making my mind up as to what I'm going to do. I think that's the difference between me now and me in the past.
So you'll notice he said the biggest thing is not predetermining what I'm going to do coming off the pick and roll. This is huge and hugely difficult. Lots of guys could want to do this. Lots of guys could try to do this. But not everyone can handle the speed at which these decisions need to be made. But if you're patient enough to wait that extra split second, wait for the play to develop, and then you're accurate enough and aggressive enough to whip a pass where it needs to go with authority, or drive the lane with authority, or pull up with authority, if you can recognize the moment you need to act and the split second it happens and not a split second later, that is like the golden goose that you're trying to milk. That doesn't make much sense. As Carmelo Soprano once said, and then later Tony Soprano said, because he's learned a lot from her. She secretly runs everything. Sometimes indecision is worse than no decision. So the ability to quickly make the right decision based on what the defense gives you and not what you want to do is really, really valuable. And I think this is what Trey Burke has been doing. I said he's been making the right reads. He has not been selfishly gunning. He's been calling his own number, but when appropriate. And he is very much aware of this being one of the primary things he has to do as a point guard. In 2018, he points to it right at the top of that question from Ian Begley. That's a good sign. What's also a good sign is that he says he's not taking a different approach. And I'll tell you why I say this is a good sign. Because sometimes I think it's not just about like doing something new. It's about it taking, as he said, years and years of like watching film the same way or practicing the same way to get comfortable. This is good not just for Trey Burke, but for Frank too. Because Trey Burke, follow me, he's the same draft class as Victor Oladipo, 2013. And they're both coming into their own in their fifth seasons. Sometimes it takes time. This is a reason, yet another reason, to be patient with someone like a Frankie. He's got some developing to do. And what you see this year is not what he'll be 4 years from now. And sometimes it's not a matter of, you know, Trey Burke, his narrative is he got his head screwed on straight. But sometimes it's about just needing time to develop. I love also in this brief clip that Trey Burke, he's clearly situationally aware. He's talking about opponents, about knowing personnel, about exploiting weaknesses in the defense. I've said this a bunch of times, but the NBA is really just an elaborate game of rock, paper, scissors. Or, as Ian Carmel would say, the great comedian, rock, paper, scissors. So, like, a lot of people talk about a team strategy and they say, you got to impose your will. You got to, like, man up and impose your will. And I think it's a little bit of a caveman theory on some level. Not just because manning up is antiquated, because women can women up too. You know what I'm saying? It's like be an adult. Instead of man up, I just want to say like be an adult, be a professional. It's not about being a man, it's not about being masculine. It's about doing your job. But anyway, you do want to impose your will. Like that's true. But these are all grown-ass men in the NBA being paid millions of dollars to do things incredibly well. And what you're actually doing in most situations is reacting to what they give you. Because if you're smart, they can't take away everything. These teams are so good, no matter how good a defense you are, you usually can't take away everything. So you try your first option, right? That's you trying to impose your will. It's you trying to do what you want to do. But often that's taken away from you. And when that's taken away from you, you have to know how to counter. Then they're going to counter back, then you counter back, and so on and so forth. It's on some level the reason the NBA playoffs is so predictable, because there's a set number of things you can do, and eventually you figure out the counter to the counter to the counter, and then you work through it, and the same situation happens over and over again, and the team with the better counter, the better personnel, is going to win over seven games. They take their baked-in advantages in their personnel, and they exploit the shit out of them over and over again. Sometimes it takes a couple games to figure out, you know, and then you keep throwing rock because you know eventually you're like, well, the other guy has this problem and it means that his fingers are already separated, even if he doesn't want to separate his fingers, so he keeps accidentally throwing scissors. So I'm going to throw a rock because rocks beat scissors, right? And maybe 25% of the time the guy's able to like really use his muscles and close up his fingers and throw paper and then he beats your rock. But 75% of the time, it's not going to work. Do you follow me? Do you follow this rock-solid analysis? All I'm trying to say is Trey Burke has been doing a wonderful job at point guarding these past few weeks. And these quotes were very encouraging that he knows why. He seems like a smart guy, too. I like him. I like Trey Burke. He's growing on me. I'm really interested to see what he's going to do next year. Can he handle like a potential starter's load? I mean, I think Frankie's the future still, starting at point guard. But shit, man, they're definitely very different players. Maybe they can start together in the backcourt for years to come. Maybe Frank becomes a three. You know what I mean? Maybe he's a guy who's just like defending the three but can easily run the point. A la, you know, like a Ben Simmons type or a Luka Doncic type. Who knows, man? It's exciting, though. It's exciting. It's going to be exciting the next few years. Have I said that? I'm excited for it. What I'm not excited for is to end the podcast. Boo! Oh, no. I miss you guys already. But that's it for us for today's episode of Locked On Knicks. Thank you so much for listening. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show. Tell your friends, family, coworkers, clergymen, apartment supers, bodega guys, subway conductors, even the guys doing showtime on the subway. They bother you. You can bother them right back. You know what I mean? Your butchers, your bakers, your candlestick makers. Tell them all about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. Follow us on Twitter after you do that. At Locked On Knicks. You can follow me on Twitter at NBA Injury Report. It's where I crack jokes about the NBA. I think you'll like it. Be chill to each other. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Join us tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Knicks. Peace!